Saturday Magazine, sponsored by Velocity Rewards,
the award-winning loyalty program for Virgin Australia's frequent flyers.
Hey, you. Yeah, you, in the car. Did you know that a big portion of people who listen to Joy in the car, just like you? Right now, times are really tough financially, and without your support, Joy may not be around to make your drive around Melbourne fun. So tell your siblings, your workmates, heck, even wind down your window and tell someone else stuck in the traffic to head over to joy.org.au and help us build Joy Nation by making a donation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
This is Saturday Magazine.
You are listening to Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9. Macker and Tass, our next guest, of course, is Associate Professor of Politics from Monash University, Paul Strangio, to talk to us about...
He's not a Strangio to this show.
No, he's not a stranger to this show, not at all, Macker. Well, he actually could actually up his ante, to be quite honest.
I know, I like speaking to Paul.
Anyway, good morning to you, Paul.
Good morning, Tass and Macker.
Good to have you on the airwaves this morning. Now, tell
Thank
us, Paul,
you.
You've just written extensively about Daniel Andrews, and I'm just going to kick off the conversation. Has the shine worn off Daniel Andrews, especially after the most extraordinary dance slide that we experienced in November 2018?
Well, some of the gloss has certainly come off him, and obviously he's gone through an extremely difficult time through the COVID pandemic and especially the second wave. But I think one of the surprising things is we've got enough polling evidence now to suggest that the public support for Daniel Andrews and for the restrictions that the government has placed on Victorians during the second wave, that support has held up pretty well. It's around, around two-thirds, the latest news poll suggested, that his approval rating was at 62%, and two-thirds of those surveyed believed his government was doing well in handling COVID-19. And just one thing I think that also indicates is that we've had a lot of very cruel criticisms of Andrews and the restrictions, but I don't think those very loud voices are representative of public opinion at large. I think the public stoically accept the restrictions and also have a sense of proportion about what's happened in Victoria with the second wave when compared to what's been going on and the severity of the crisis in many other parts of the world.
Paul, is this a case, it's Macca here, is this a case perhaps of, yes, the critics have been quite loud, vocal, and, generated for themselves some coverage. Is this a case that what the polling is saying, that the majority, dare I say it, the silent majority of Victorians, are actually saying, yeah, well...
We approve.
We approve of what the Premier has done. Now, obviously, some people have some concerns about how some of it's been handled. But that the majority of people actually approve. So, is that a fair thing to say?
Well, I think from the polling evidence, and it's not just News poll, the Roy Morgan polls found a similar sort of... levels of support. So I think that's true. And it's one of the problems, I think, in the current media landscape, and particularly, from the mainstream media, and here I particularly nominate the News Corp newspapers, which have been particularly vitriolic about Daniel Andrews and the government's handling of the pandemic, and that's both the Herald Sun and the Australian. And I think, again, we read some of the columns there and it's easy to think that maybe the public is thinking along similar lines. And as I said, the polling evidence doesn't suggest that. And it was interesting, when I pointed that out in the column I wrote about Daniel Andrews this week, I had a phone call from an Australian journalist who was quite unhappy at my characterisation of News Corp's coverage of Daniel Andrews and the pandemic. And, you know, I thought that was very curious because, in my defence, I could have just pointed to, you know, columns by Robert Gottliebson, Terry Cran, Anne Bolt, Janabelle Brixen, Adam Crichton, Gerard Henderson, you could go on and on, who have been completely hyperbolic, you know, claiming that Victorians have lost their civil liberty, that Daniel Andrews has morphed into a dictator. There's been suggestions that there might need to be Commonwealth intervention in Victoria. So, you know, very inflammatory writings. And as I said, I don't think it's reflective of mainstream opinion at all.
It's a cabal of the disaffected. And, you know...
Well, it's a cabal of what I call angry old men.
Yeah. Really. Oh, and the
angry
old...
And
the old angry old... And the angry women too. I mean, I think,
yes.
You know, Paul, one of the challenges here is, you know, it's good that they actually read your column. I always thought they lived in a complete echo chamber, but it's good that they read your column. Do you think, you know, let's fast forward. The next state election is 2 years and a month away, and, you know, I think you have a greater love of political statistics than me, if that's possible. But if you had to... you know, make, not a prediction, but do you think this is going to, let's assume we come out of COVID, you know, the next stage of lockdown in Victoria and the economy starts to rebuild and reopen. And so 2 years and a month hence, is this time going to have a big impact on the next state election?
I think in part you've already answered, Michael. I think it's significantly will be determined by the economic reckoning, how poorly the Victorian economy and the national economy, of course, because we can't separate them, recover from the COVID crisis. I think some of the issues around the restrictions and the problems with quarantine program here in Victoria, they will receive most probably, but it's the economic costs and how they play out over the next 2 years. I think.
Can you unpack that a bit more? What do you mean by that, Paul? Because I'm hearing a couple of sides to that argument. I'm hearing people say the bottom line no longer matters. What matters is jobs and a productive economy.
Well, that's, in a sense, what I'm saying. Look, it's very hard to predict how the actual pandemic will, whether that will come under control in the next 12 months, issues about a vaccine that are very much up in the air. But as I said, I think you're right, Cass. It'll be jobs. It will be about whether the economy, you know, starts to grow again, how deep is the recession. And they're the sort of things I think that ultimately will determine the next state election. It's been very interesting, too, in that context, that some have said Andrew may step aside. In that column, again, I argued that it would go against type because Andrews does revel in the exercise of power. And I think he's the sense, too, he wants to probably make amends for the sort of problems that have engulfed Victoria with the second wave. So he strikes me as unlikely person to walk away from power.
I wanted, if I could, to slightly segue to the US. Look, there are many scenarios that can play out with Donald Trump testing positive for COVID. He's now, out of an abundance of caution, I love that term, an abundance of caution, you know, gone to the Walter Reed Hospital near the White House. What do you think, Paul? TASS is of the view that the president testing positive is only win-win for him in his re-election bid. I don't think it's so much that way. What is your take on this and some of the scenarios that might potentially play out before Election Day?
Well, of course, again, as I know, the wider how unwell people become, and when he can return to the campaign trail.
Paul, the line's actually breaking up a little bit. Are you able to...
Sorry. Yeah, I just said one of the unknowns, of course, is how unwell Trump will become and therefore how long he will be away from the campaign trail. I can't help but note the irony that it seems like the right-wing populace of the global leadership, Bolsonaro, Johnson and now Trump, have been shown to be vulnerable to COVID-19. It is a delicious irony in many ways. But look, I think ultimately I'm probably on the side that thinks this war, if anything, played badly for Trump, given his rather cavalier approach to the pandemic, given the way it's now been exposed that he knew how serious it was and yet tried to camouflage that from the American public, given his performance in the debate the other day, when again he was seen to be mocking the use of masks and be cavalier about public gathering. Yeah, my sense is it probably will play badly for him. It won't be with, you know, his rusted on supporters. I guess he famously said he could walk down 38th Street in New York or whatever and shoot a gun and they would stick with him.
Yeah.
But I think the last of the those who haven't decided their vote, if anything, it's likely to play badly for Trump with them.
You see, Tass thinks it's a win-win for him. He thinks Tass is of the view that...
Well, what I've articulated is that you know, if he dies, his supporters will blame it on the left. If he becomes extremely unwell, he'll get the sympathy vote. If he survives this and comes forward in a couple of weeks' time virtually unscathed, he'll just belittle the virus as being another, you know, bit of fake news and continue to fuel
his see an uptick in the sale side. Of disinfectant.
Macca thinks Pino Clan's on the rise.
I think one of the issues when thinking about the American election now is just how polarised the electorate is. And again, I think the indications are most Americans have now made up their mind.
Yeah.
And I think, Tass, you're perhaps right about Trump's hardcore supporters, but I'm less convinced about the remainder of the electorate.
Some of the other interesting scenarios, you know, are if Trump is unwell enough to actually make an appearance before the election, you know, if other than, you know, doing some virtual events, if he's not actually, you know, to be out and seen, I don't think that works in his favour. I think, you know, what it highlights for me is the US Constitution covers a couple of scenarios, but it doesn't cover a lot of the scenarios that potentially could happen. And I think more most importantly is I think this election is going to be decided in the Supreme Court or at the very least in Congress, because I think it's going to be a close election, and I think when none of us know how this is going to play out over the next few weeks.
Well, yeah, it was interesting how the two candidates handled that question again during the debate. And Biden said, look, go out and vote and your vote will determine this election. It is striking. If we had a more vital Democrat candidate,
yes,
who didn't look himself like he would be very vulnerable to COVID-19 and is struggling to exhibit much, as I said, physical vitality, it might have played better for the Democrats in that sense. But look, I think we can get caught up in the hyperbole that Trump's trying to surround the election in. Most probably Americans will vote in early November, and yes, it might take a few days or even longer for the result to be determined, but most probably I think it will be decisive enough for it not to be challenged. That's a very rare thing if you go back.
It does depend largely on the turnout, though, because we've had just under half the population vote in the last election, and we do know that if people do vote, you know, essentially Americans are Democrats in their nature overall, but they don't vote.
True, and we should remember the electoral system is now favours the Republicans, so that's another hurdle that Biden has to get over. And so he does need a clear, he'll need a clear and decisive win in the popular vote. Hillary was demonstrated with Hillary Clinton as the close popular vote. She won, but it wasn't large enough, and therefore, of course, the Democrats tend to pile up votes in their safe states, and that's become a problem for them. But nonetheless, look, I think the latest polls, the latest indicators are, it's suggesting that, you know, and again, polls were discredited last time, but it was close the last time, but they're now saying it's the 80% chance that Biden will win. So I think maybe, as I said, we can get caught up with the hyperbole that Trump's actually trying to encourage.
One of our listeners, Paul, one of our listeners has written in and said, if polls were ever right, we would have had President Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, but that was the popular vote. And don't forget, she won the popular vote. She didn't win the Electoral College. Think back to Billy Snedden when he, in the 1974 election.
Most of us weren't alive then.
No. He got more votes than Whitlam, but he said, you know, oh yes, we won the vote, we just didn't win enough seats. Same thing.
Yeah, and that's right. In the Australian system, you can win the two-party preferred vote and not win the election, as happened in any number of times. But as I said, just to go back to my point, I think on balance, I still think it'll be decisive enough result for there not to be the level of contestation about the result that Trump is trying to encourage. And in some ways, it's a desperate tactic. Remember, he is trailing quite badly
in the polls. Yep.
And not only the polls nationwide, but in, you know, the key battleground states.
Yeah. Well, you've made my day, Paul. That's been a great analysis.
I'm trying to soothe you, Paul.
Well, I just feel like I can now go and have a relaxing weekend because it's exactly what I wanted to hear.
Let's get Paul back the Saturday before.
Yes, I think you're
before
right.
Before the election, put in your diary, Paul. Sorry, look, we're out of time. We appreciate your insight. Hope you enjoy the day, and we look forward to speaking to you the Saturday before the US election.
Thanks, Tessa. Thank you.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.